Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, along with the voice of CinemaSins, Jeremy Scott.
Howdy.
Along with Music Video Sins writers Barrett Scher and
Yo.
Jay Lalonde.
Greetings.
All from different parts of the United States of A today. Today we're going to be talking about Grammys and nominations and music in general in 2015.
And grandmas.
And, you know, I guess what we'll do is we'll just go ahead and kick it off with Barrett, our resident music expert.
Well, yeah. So unlike the Oscars, to me, the Grammys are more about just kind of looking back over the last year in music and obviously the performances in the actual broadcast and everything. It's less about the awards rather than talk about the Grammys themselves, because they'll be airing on the same day that this podcast comes out. We talk a little bit about the nominees, but more about, you know, what you remember about 2015, the beginning of 2016, what was kind of the marker of that period of time. What stands out to you guys, Jay? What's the big thing that you remember about 2015?
I think Kendrick Lamar definitely sealed his place in history as one of the great modern rappers and people in hip hop. And then I think like a piece of music that and a person in music that people haven't really talked about this year. And this is might reflect where I'm from and what I grew up on, but Dr. Dre's Compton album was amazing. It was like a hip hop opera, and I thought it was one of the most underrated albums all year. But between those two, representing the West Coast, does that still exist? East Coast, West Coast? I don't know.
Sure, the coasts exist.
I thought those two really, you know, set their mark. And then, of course, you had the typical Drakes and Nicki Minaj's, who also had good years, but those two, I think, stand out the most for me.
So when you think about 2015, you think about the state of hip hop, basically, right?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. No, hip hop still rules. I mean, Taylor Swift is still like, you know, a huge name. And then even someone like The Weeknd really popped into the bigger conversation. And you see on YouTube. These artists really killed it this year, but, it's easy to say this and talk about mainstream acts. I know we're going to get a lot of shit because people are going to be like, yeah, but what about this one band that two people have heard of that has like a billion people on SoundCloud? And we're going to get shit all day long for that. But we're, you know, since we're talking about Grammys and, you know, people who really made a mark in 2015, those are the people who come to mind.
Huh. You know, there's a few things, I guess, for me that stand out. I think there was a period of time where in, you know, 2015, you couldn't get on the internet without hearing about the Chris Stapleton, Justin Timberlake performance at the CMA Awards. That seemed like that defined a piece of the year easily, because it was in everybody's Facebook feeds forever. You know, hey, here's another angle of it. Here's somebody shooting it in the audience, you know, that type of thing. And since we are a YouTube based, entity here, I was looking at these Record of the Year nominations and everything, and I was like, who had the biggest YouTube hits? And remember when Gangnam Style, it was a big deal for a song to hit a billion views?
Mm-hmm.
Now this is happening regularly. And out of all that group that is in Record of the Year, Taylor Swift, Bruno Mars, The Weeknd, and all that, who had the biggest hit?
Bruno Mars. Oh, well, Mark Ronson featuring Bruno Mars.
And who had the most views on YouTube? Who do you think?
Out of best record?
Yeah, Record of the Year.
Well, probably Taylor Swift.
Yeah, Taylor Swift has 1.4 billion views for Blank Space. And Uptown Funk had 1.3 billion. They're basically the same.
Damn.
The Weeknd is almost about to hit a billion.
For which one?
I Can't Feel My Face. I think there's another one on there. What are the other nominees? That there's that one that's
for Record of the Year. It's Ed Sheeran, who's got to be up there too.
Yeah, that one's up there as well. I don't know if it's hit a billion yet, but it's up in the 900 million or something like that.
Yeah, and the other one is the D'Angelo Really Love song, which can't have that many.
No, it's not. It's not in the same class as those four.
Yeah.
That's what stuck out to me is that it's apparently it's up easier now, or people have started to choose YouTube more often for their listening, purposes now. But it's not inconceivable that one of these songs could overtake Gangnam Style at some point, because Gangnam Style's at like 2.5 billion or something like that, which is still a billion ahead.
I think Uptown Funk has the best chance to overtake it, more so than Blank Space, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of surprised that Blank Space was still ahead. Or, didn't Blank Space come out before Uptown Funk?
Yeah, just a few months before.
Yeah, so I think Uptown Funk is probably catching up and is going to pass at some point. I think it does have a good chance, because now, looking at these numbers, I'm just shocked, because it was a big deal for Gangnam Style to hit a billion, back then. And then now it's just like, oh, it's happening all the time now.
Well, that's an interesting point, because Gangnam Style was popular. Like, you put that on. The reason that it collected so many views is that you put that on for a family member or like somebody who hadn't seen it and be like, you have to watch this crazy shit right here, because it was more visual. It was the dance. It was Psy being all Psy-y and crazy and that kind of thing. And it was less the song. The song's kind of just a stupid pop ditty. But Uptown Funk is kind of the converse of that, where there's more substance in the song itself. And the only reason, or not the only reason, but one of the big reasons that it would get so many views is that people would put it on in the background at parties or something like that, or while they're getting ready for something, rather than it doesn't really add all that much visually, besides Bruno, getting his hair dead and everything with Mark Ronson and polishing his shoes and that shit. So, yeah, I mean, so that's actually interesting, maybe, because in that case, then Blank Space has probably a better video than song, I would say.
And I think, yeah, and it's kind of
Uptown Funk.
And it's kind of interesting. I think Taylor Swift sort of brought back music videos. Like, I don't, maybe
yeah,
I'm complete, I'm maybe I'm completely off the mark here. Maybe there's been people making 90s, 80s style music videos all this time, but Taylor Swift really sort of came back with that, especially with Bad Blood, which was like it was a theatrical video like we used to see. That's one thing that I think is really, really interesting about that, because you don't really, it used to be you had to make a music video to get your song to be a success and everything, and then that fell by the wayside, and now it looks like it's making a comeback.
Let me ask Jeremy, what was your thoughts on how 2015 shook out musically in your mind? Did you have anything that kind of defined it or stood out to you?
It's just Taylor Swift everywhere. And
yeah,
I don't really have the problem with that some people do. But it seemed like she dominated, at least in terms of like my memory of that time in music, whether it was on YouTube or on the radio or on freaking TV, or she was just everywhere.
It wasn't even close. I mean, she's by far the most dominant performer this year, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think there were a lot of memorable music moments this year. I think Uptown Funk is in any other year, that's the thing you come away with maybe, but she was just everywhere. Every single one of her songs was huge. Like, I was looking over the Grammy nominations earlier and was surprised to see that Blank Space is the one that she's nominated the most for, because I don't think that's close to being the best song off that album. But
no, I agree.
By the way, I guess this conversation's going all over the place, but the Grammys really need to stop this record of the year and song of the year thing.
Oh my God.
They need to stop this. I know that the record of the year is for the, they look at everything, the performance, the producers, all this other stuff. Song of the year, why don't they just call it Songwriting of the Year? Why can they not do that?
Yes, I totally agree. I've been trying to figure out, I guess it made more sense back in the 60s where you would have a completely different songwriter and a completely, which obviously still happens today, but it was just more common to separate the performer versus the person who wrote it versus the person who produced it and that kind of thing. And it was, important back there. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If it's record of the year, if it goes to Taylor Swift, it's not like, and then she also wins Song of the Year. It's not gonna be like, her production staff really did the record of the year, so she really didn't have anything to do with that. But good for her getting the Song of the Year.
Yeah. No. And the other thing about the Grammys is you said it right off the top that it's not really about the awards. It's about everybody doing their thing and the performances and all that. I don't know if this is one of the least essential major awards, right?
Yeah, for sure.
It's everything. If the Oscars had, it's like sort of parallel this. If the Oscars had a category for best horror performance,
don't give them ideas.
the Grammys. We got to appeal to everybody. And the thing is, it's weird they feel the need to do that, because all these people who are getting like best metal performance and all that, they aren't going to go up on the stage and, it's all going to be awarded before the show. But it's like you go through these nominees and you're like, God,
I wish they would award best metal performance live during the broadcast.
Oh, it would be fantastic.
Slipknot come up and accept.
Exactly. Good God, though. I mean, there's just so many awards, and like anytime you see, I have this sort of this idea that you can go to a Wikipedia page of any band and find out that they've at least been nominated once for a Grammy. They probably won several Grammys too. You just don't know it.
Yeah, it's definitely absolutely the least essential and more egalitarian. I would say the Emmys are about the same, though.
Yeah.
Because you've got your local Emmys, and then you've got your production Emmys, and you got your daytime Emmys and all that.
Yeah, and you can, that's another one. You can pick almost any actor who's had any sort of famous role over the years. They've probably won an Emmy.
Well, it seems to me like the Grammys, I've always viewed them as different from the Oscars in that, like, the Oscars are definitely trying to award the best, the very best quality, right? And like the Grammys seem to take popularity into account. Like, oh, this single was number one for 6 months. It's give it a Grammy. And I'm like, wait, what? Is it a good song?
yeah, exactly. I feel the same way.
It as different.
It's a popularity contest. Yeah. And speaking of Bieber, did he not have probably the best year that he could have? I would say career wise, it couldn't have gone any better for Bieber. At this point, it was a redemptive album. It was actually musically pretty good. His music videos are, like Chris was saying, up around a billion. And it really, certainly, like, Where Are You Now? And then What Do You Mean? Like, all these You things. And, of course, Sorry and all that stuff. Like, they really became a big movement for him. And these late stage, teeny bopper pop stars have now kind of entered into that next thing where they could go two routes. They could go like This is what I'm interested to see what Harry Styles does after One Direction, actually, is to see if he goes like a Justin Timberlake route or if he goes like a Bobby Brown route or something like that, you know?
Well, he really did himself a favor with the most recent single, the soft guitar Love Yourself thing.
Like, oh, absolutely.
That came on the radio and I was about to change it. And my wife said, "What's this?" And I was like, "This is Justin Bieber." She was like, "Wait, really?" And she listened to the whole thing and she loved it. And I was like, "Great."
It's a good song. The worst part of that song is him.
Well, speaking of which, 2015 might also be known for the year that everybody decided masturbation's all right.
Let's talk about it.
Everybody's got a yourself song, you know, and it's and I it was amazing when all these scripts for the music video sends were coming in. I was sitting there going, are these all the same song? Are they just what's the deal with this, man? Everybody's loving themselves. What's going on with that? And it's all in a row. It's crazy. I've never seen anything like it. But, you know, I'm not going to complain if Hailee Steinfeld and Selena Gomez want to sit there and talk about flicking the bean. I really don't have any problem with that whatsoever.
I'm not going to say anything. Bow out of this topic for now.
Yeah.
It's probably a good thing.
Hey, Chris, can we run down? I don't want it to be a Grammy-centric, as in, like, that's the only thing we talk about, but we want to. Can we run down like the four big categories?
Yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah. So record of the, we talked about the difference between Song of the Year and Record of the Year, which is total bullshit. But Record of the Year, which includes the production staff and the engineering and things like that, has they all have five candidates. You've got D'Angelo with Really Love that came off of that Black Messiah album. And before we started recording, Jay was talking about how that really didn't necessarily catch on.
Yeah, that was that's. I actually just heard that song a couple of days ago, and I said, first off, I was like, "What? Well, who is this?" Yeah. And then played it, and I was like, "Oh, that's a perfectly good song."
It's a weird song to be nominated off that album, actually, because mm-hmm. the rest of the album is, you know, the Really Love is more like kind of flamenco and a little bit of like a different influence than a traditional R&B, but the rest of it is kind of different from that, and I think there's much better songs that could be nominated.
I don't know how songs are nominated in the Grammys or anything is nominated in the Grammys, but could this possibly be something where there's a bunch of songs nominated like to consider and everybody divides up their votes and something like that ends up being a higher vote count just because everybody split up their votes on the better stuff?
I don't know if it's enough to actually get it to the actual award. But, yeah, I hear what you're saying. Like, the two big ones here are Uptown Funk and Blank Space. And Can't Feel My Face is a great track and maybe popular. Ed Sheeran's Thinking Out Loud has a chance.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think those two big heavyweights will probably kind of split the vote. And maybe something can come out of nowhere like the Weeknd.
Yeah.
So, anyway, the album – okay, so that's Record of the Year. If it were up to me, Uptown Funk, I think, should be the record of the decade so far, I think.
Mm-hmm. To me, it feels like it has to be Uptown Funk. I mean, I agree that you can't count out Taylor, but this feels like, to me, just like when, you know, somebody's been lavished with awards all their whole life and everything, and, you know, hey, it's time to give the new person something. And this song was, you know, you're talking about ubiquity. This song was everywhere. You couldn't go anywhere without hearing Uptown Funk. Every wedding you went to had Uptown Funk. You know, anytime you turned on the radio, Uptown Funk, you know, it was everywhere. And I can't see how you can not give it the you know, the record of the year.
I heard it played at a funeral.
You heard it at a funeral?
No.
No, it's still everywhere.
The fact that you kind of believed it says something.
It does. It says a lot more than you think.
Well, this gets into the bullshit about the song versus record of the year, because Song of the Year does not feature Uptown Funk by Mark Ronson, by the way, not Bruno Mars, who would get the credit, but obviously it's Bruno Mars' song. But yeah, Song of the Year has a song that Chris and I were talking about before, Kendrick Lamar's All Right. Mm-hmm. Which is a terrific, unbelievable song. I don't know, even know if that's the best song off of that album.
No, I like King Kunta really best off of that album. But you know, it's sort of an interjection here about Kendrick Lamar. You had mentioned something about you felt like those would be bigger albums in the 90s or, you know, something like that. Is it wrong of me to bring up the N-word on these too?
Generally,
you get a reputation as a guy who really likes talking about this.
Well, here's the thing. You can't get radio airplay really with, especially a song like All Right, which is constantly. Yeah. And yeah. And earlier I was looking for Drake's Back to Back, which doesn't have an official video, but also littered with it.
Yeah.
And like, that's another, that might be one of the reasons why it didn't take off as much as it could have. Both of those songs, or both of those. Well, I mean, Drake's obviously huge, but it, that sounds like something where you kind of got, you know, you kind of got put on a list where you can't really play that song on the radio.
That's a good theory. I like that.
Yeah. I wonder how, because there's always radio edits from the old like Snoop albums, from Doggy Style and from The Chronic, obviously. Maybe it just wasn't as frequent. I mean, it seems like it was listening to the uncensored version. But then the radio edit would have, you know, I can't remember all the different, you know, stand-ins for that word and for the other curses. But yeah, you'd think that there would be some way to get that edit done. Back in the mid-2000s or so, do you remember watching MTV and they would just cut out chunks of the lyrics?
Yeah. Oh, it was so annoying. It was so annoying because they would be sitting there like, yeah, like somebody would be in the middle of this big, huge, you know, flourishing rap, and it'd be like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then, yeah, yeah, well, you know, the rap stylings of Chris Atkins and Ladies and Gentlemen.
So, yeah, for the song of the year, Blank Space is on there. Interestingly, I don't know, you guys are in, Chris and Jeremy are in country territory. You probably heard Girl Crush from Little Big Town.
No, you know what? I tend to, even though I'm living in the heart of Nashville, I don't hear those songs that often, but I did hear that one. I had to go find it, and I was like, oh, yeah, I think I vaguely remember hearing this somewhere before. But, yeah, I heard it.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It is really, it's a really terrific song. The harmonics on there are just to die for. Like, I heard it once and was just transfixed.
And it's sort of Nashville's, they've been doing this for the past few years, sort of gravitating away from that usual twang and usual, whatever makes country country, you know, whatever people don't typically like about country. They've been sort of going more a pop direction. That's why for a long time Taylor Swift was still being considered a country artist, even though she wasn't. But you're seeing like different artists like Casey Musgraves and all these people come in, and they're singing about different things than normal country music used to sing about.
No, you're exactly right. And actually, that brings, I wanted to just briefly touch on Album of the Year. And one of the big surprises for Album of the Year is Chris Stapleton, who is kind of what was generally considered like the Nashville Rebel, but now has become more of the norm in not necessarily, I don't know what they call it, like bro country or something like that, which I guess was more of like the Zac Brown type of guys. But like, he's more old school country, like your Merle Haggard and your Johnny Cash and that kind of thing. And it's really, really fascinating. I mean, it's like proto rock. That Tennessee Whiskey song on this album really could be played on any radio station or any playlist or anything like that. It's not traditional country, even though it's more, if this makes sense, it's more country than anything that's been coming out of Nashville for the last 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And if you want to aspire to do great country music, then you want to go back then, because that's the only country music that's tolerable to me is the older stuff. You know,
it helps that guy can sing.
Like, yeah,
I mean, yeah. I don't know. I don't think I can name a single other country music star that's male that I've heard sing that could hold a candle to this guy's voice.
That's correct. He's really, really good. And that's sort of, I mean, that's sort of why that his duet with Justin Timberlake was such a, you know, landmark thing was that
it was incredible.
He's great, and Timberlake's little falsetto, you know, sort of offsetting it and everything is perfect mix.
It's surprising to see how well or hear how well he can sing just by looking at him. I don't know. You know just doesn't seem like he's got those chops on him.
He's 90% beard.
That's profiling.
Two things I want to mention. Best new artist, I actually didn't even want to talk about because I thought it was a bullshit category. But then I went back and looked, and the best new artist winners have been actually really predictive of future success.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Let me just read you this list of the last, you know, few years here. So, okay, we don't really know what's going to come out of Sam Smith from last year. Macklemore 2 years ago. In 2013 was Fun, which probably will make a comeback after they kind of went their separate ways. 2012, Bon Iver. 2000, who's still thriving. 2011 was maybe a little bit of a blip. It was Esperanza Spalding.
Yeah. Who? Yeah.
Exactly. But then look at this run, though. So 2010, Zach Brown Band. Obviously a huge thing right now. 2009, Adele. That's a win.
Mm-hmm.
2008, Amy Winehouse.
Yep.
2007, Carrie Underwood. 2006, John Legend. 2005, gave us Maroon 5, unfortunately.
Right.
And on and on and on. Evanescence was 2004, which didn't last long. But then Norah Jones, Alicia Keys, Shelby Lynn, Christina Aguilera in 2000. So this actually has been a pretty good predictor of success.
Interesting.
That is interesting. I listened to a few of these new artists, and the one that I liked out of, I'm sure that it's going to be Meghan Trainor's one to win.
Sure.
But the one is it Courtney Barnett is
right,
her name?
Yeah.
Well, I actually heard five of her songs. One was called Pedestrian. What is it?
At Best.
Pedestrian at Best, which reminded me of like the 90s indie rock scene. It's got that fuzzy guitar in it and all that, and it's really a cool song.
I have heard of her, and I agree. Like, she's like, I could see her music being in commercials, you know? Like,
yeah.
But Bouncy is her jam, right? So I don't know if she's the one. I think you're right. I think Meghan Trainor will be the one that sticks with it.
And that feels like the one that will win. It's the one that everybody really knows out of that group.
She's also had a career, like a lot of artists, as a songwriter. So she's written a lot of songs for people that are famous and people who are producers and people who will be voting for the Grammys. So I think that gives her an edge.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. If you're looking for somebody to come out of nowhere, I would say Tori Kelly, just because she's so talented. I mean, she's got an incredible voice. She's got a Christina Aguilera voice.
Yeah. And she sings in that genre there where, you know, it's the perfect pop music type of, you know, it's easily accessible.
Yes, it is. Okay. The last category I just wanted to look at, the hilariously rock performance. This is always funny to me every year, and it's been getting more and more hilarious. Florence and the Machine. It's really stretching there. Alabama Shakes. Okay. You could do Foo Fighters are basically, you know, if they fart out an album once a year, they'll get in there.
Yeah. They're the Meryl Streep of rock.
Exactly. L. King is nominated for rock performance.
Right. Weird.
And this is an interesting thing. So there's a band called Wolf Alice that's nominated. Are you guys familiar with this?
Yeah. You sent me a song of theirs earlier this morning and I listened to it. And it was pretty good. I liked it.
This band's incredible, actually. I had never heard of them before. And, you know, we're trying to, you know, cover as many bases as I can, especially in rock, because I'm looking for anything that is, you know, half awake. And this is a real, Chris is talking about like a 90s throwback thing. This is more of like a 90s, like, fuzz-based throwback to like Liz Phair or maybe even like Garbage or something like that. That's got a female lead, but is just really, really poppy and heavy. It's almost like a conversion of like Liz Phair and Smashing Pumpkins.
Right.
Maybe they wouldn't want me to, or Hole. There's a whole influence there.
Well, which Hole? Because I like last Hole album that was a little more produced and poppy?
The Malibu, the one that had Malibu on it?
Oh, the one that had all the poppy songs. You put me on the spot, bastard.
No. I forget the name of the album, but yeah, it's more in that direction.
Well, man,
but it's really, really good. I listened to it. I ended up downloading, you know, everything they had, and it's really, really terrific. So I hope they win. Probably like me, nobody has ever heard of them, but yeah, they're really, really terrific.
I'm gonna check it out after the bands you describe it as being similar to, because I like all those.
Well, yeah, and that video that you sent me, Barrett, reminded me a little bit, and I could be off base here, but it reminded me of that Squirrel Nut Zippers video that came out in the 90s, the one that was the In the Afterlife or whatever.
Yeah, Hell was the name of the song.
Yeah, Hell. Yeah. It reminded me of that for some reason, and I can't quite put my finger on it. It might be just the... I don't know.
It was the look of it. I know exactly what you're talking about. It was that red background in a lounge club and everything, and the lighting, and even the singer in the video who's affecting this woman's voice, who's a guy. He kind of had the same look, like a vaudeville type of look. So
yeah. So when I saw that, I was like, oh yeah, Squirrel Nut Zippers, boom. Yeah, so we definitely all should take a listen to Wolf Alice after this, because that, yeah, you're right. All those different bands and people that you just mentioned are amazing. So
enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
So, speaking of 90s bands, I thought this was hilarious, because I put a list of what I was looking forward to in 2016, because I actually want to hear what you guys think. But I just think it's hilarious that the following bands are putting out albums in 2016. Metallica, Radiohead, Soundgarden, Deftones, Smashing Pumpkins, and less hilarious but still equally interesting is Nine Inch Nails.
Hmm. Okay.
I am probably looking forward to maybe two of those.
Yeah, that's a problem with some of those bands. They've had their peak, and that's where they're going to be. I mean, that Metallica, I don't think has come out with anything good since Black Album, have they?
Saint Anger.
See, I mean, most of these things that you mentioned might have a song on it that's good. But I don't know if there's if it gets past three good songs.
What people generally consider is their return to form after those whole kind of more after they cut their hair, you know,
right?
they started doing like songs that would be featured on Chevy commercials. The return to form was Death Magnetic back in 2008.
Yeah.
And that was kind of, they say, more of like an Injustice for All or Ride the Lightning or Master of Puppets type of thing. I don't think it was.
I just disagree.
More symphonic, you know, more structured in nature.
I'm thrilled to see Metallica come out with a new album, because it means they're going to tour. And whether you like them or not, or maybe you might know like one song of Metallica, go and see a Metallica show. It's fucking awesome, and there's no other way to describe it.
Yeah, I actually went to one, and it was at here in Nashville at Bridgestone Arena, and I just couldn't hear anything. I was just in the wrong spot, because a lot of the people who were there were like, "Oh, it was awesome. I was at this row and whatever," and I was like, "Man, all it was noise." I knew what songs they were playing, but I just wasn't in the right spot. So I came off not enjoying it. I don't think it was because of them, though.
Yeah, don't go to where Chris goes.
Right.
But
I think it was just a weird, you know, warp in the sound that from where I was sitting. And
yeah, they're super loud in general, so it's hard to really pick out anything. They played Bonnaroo somewhere around 2006 or something like that. And they stopped in Nashville the night before, and they played this small club called The Basement.
Yeah.
I think Chris has been there. And it's, you know, maybe the size of a
basement.
A basement. like a big basement, like maybe a two-bedroom apartment or something like that.
I've been there. It's tiny. It's a closet.
You've been there? Yeah. Yeah, it's tiny. And they played there the night before, and apparently they didn't really turn down their amps.
Jeez.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Everybody walked out of there and no idea what they listened to, but they knew it was awesome.
Yeah. You know, also on that list, Smashing Pumpkins, I actually recently saw them as well, at the new Ascend Amphitheater here in Nashville.
Oh, really? How was it?
Here's my thing. Like, the reviews that came out afterward were saying, wow, what a great show and all this other stuff. I didn't really like the show when it came to the old stuff, because I think Billy Corgan is officially is tired of all that stuff from the 90s. So almost every big hit, it sounded like to me that he was rushing through it and saying, let's just get this, and, you know, let's give the fans what they want. But what I really want to sing are my newer songs. And he really put a lot of energy in the newer songs, and they were really good from what I could hear. I was actually more impressed with the newer stuff than the older stuff, but he wasn't giving the older stuff the good old college try like he should have. But
that's so annoying to me. They've been doing, I don't know if it was that he probably didn't want to play them anymore, but they've actually been playing songs at like a 1.5 times speed live since about 1996.
The
first time I saw him, maybe they didn't want to play Today for like the 9,000th time at that point, or like Cherub Rock, but it just seemed like either they were on some very strong amphetamines, or they were just kind of, this is their thing. They play their songs fast and everything. And it was over, and, you know, the 3-minute song was over in like 2 minutes and 15 seconds.
Yeah.
It's annoying too.
Now, and also this could also have something to do with, although I'm not going to blame it completely, but, Nashville's curfew at 11 o'clock, where, you know, you can't play past 11 especially if you're outside, I guess that's one of the rules, because all the neighbors complain and so on and so forth. So it could have been something like that, where they're like, let's get this in so that we can do the other stuff. But, you know, you did that on all the older ones. You didn't do that on the newer ones at all. I saw them about 20 or so years ago as well at Vanderbilt.
That's a good one.
Yeah, and that was a really good show. That was basically just Cherub Rock. That's all they had out at the time. Besides what was the first album?
It was Gish.
Yeah, Gish. They had Gish and Cherub Rock out at the time, but that was it. And that was a really good show. Good, energetic, you know. Oh, we saw Smashing Pumpkins, and it rocked, you know.
They were touring with Garbage at that point?
No, at the time, catch this, there was a band called Red Red Meat.
Yes.
They were from Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a hell of a show.
Here's a shocker. Red Red Meat was not Best New Artist nominees, by the way.
It's such a robbery. It just shows how the Grammys are not, you know, they're not relevant anymore.
It's not perfect. What are you going to do?
Radiohead might be interesting, but they're also a band that's been around for so long now.
I'm so tired of Radiohead. Just stop it.
Well, and I also, I mean, I don't think I'm alone on this. But that heap of praise thrown on, what album
are you talking? Are you thinking about Kid A?
Kid A.
Yeah. Okay.
Kid A was by Rolling Stone and by Pitchfork number one in that decade. And I have heard this album many, many, many times. And I never got it. Never got it once that it was the best of that decade.
Now, you're not alone.
And
you were alone, but now there's backlash to it. The proper backlash, I think. I think the way it was explained at the time was they did OK Computer as their concept album. And then because they were so popular or one thing or another, they said, well, you know what? Fuck it. We're going to become computers. And, you know, here's our computer album. And that became Kid A and its follow-up, Amnesiac, I think.
Yeah, so. I had a friend who would just always extol the virtues of that album. And I just, man, what is it that I'm missing, guys?
I'm missing it, too. I don't know.
And I heard, there's a couple of songs on there that I really like. But all the other stuff, I'm like, yeah, I can do without that. I don't have to hear that every time. That's not something that I need to go back to.
Idiotech was probably the one that you're thinking about. That's a terrific song, but mm-hmm. I think that album was massively overrated.
Yeah, yeah. It might be the most overrated album of all time.
Yeah, I could get that. I would I probably should edit this out, but I would put Sgt. Pepper's on there as one of the most overrated.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably a good one, too. So Radiohead coming out with a new album, for me, I guess I'm old school about Radiohead, but I like the Bends and I like OK Computer the best. And since then, they've come out with almost inaccessible music to me. So,
Jeremy, what do you think of the Kanye album? Are you excited?
Yes, I can't contain my excitement. I'm over this guy. I'm so over this guy that he can rap about having sex with Taylor Swift and making her famous and then claim he got her permission and she loved it, even though her spokesperson says, yeah, no, that's not what happened. And we're just looking the other way because he's entertaining. Dance for us, but, you know, be a dickhead. I hate him.
Go on.
No, I'm done. That's it. But, I mean, you can enjoy his music, and I don't blame you for that.
So what about you guys? I will, of course, listen to it because I've liked all the stuff that Kanye's come out with before this. What are you excited about a new album?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I'm mm-hmm. with you. I agree he's a dick, but I actually think Yeezus was one of the most underrated albums from 2013. I was first blown away by it when I heard him do New Slaves on Saturday Night Live. And I was like, oh my God, this is an avant-garde performance by Kanye West. I think that sentence actually came out of my mouth, which is a little uncanny. But so yes, he's a dick, but he does put out really cool and innovative work. And to go back to his original stuff, like College Dropout, I think is one of the great albums of in the last 20 years or so.
Well, and is this outrageous quote unquote behavior by Kanye? Is it no different from Miley Cyrus going around and doing the stuff that she does and all these artists that really are more about, I it's debatable whether or not you think Miley Cyrus has good music or not, but they're more than just the music. They're also an act and they're always trying to, pimp their act.
I think that's different than Kanye. I mean, Kanye's legitimately believes everything he does is great and can't fathom anyone else agreeing. And this is, I go all the way back to that Katrina telethon where he decided to say George Bush doesn't care about black people. Like, he's always on his own agenda and he's always me, me, me. And he's an asshole. And I think that's different than regular self-promotion.
Jeremy, but can you also agree with this? That is one of the great last moments of live television that I think we've seen in our lifetime.
Well, I mean, that was pure shock value and chaos, yes. But yeah, I don't think we can. I mean, he could have punched somebody in the face and it would have been a memorable TV moment, right?
I'm just grateful for that moment. I was in New Orleans during Katrina. I was stuck for 3 nights and 4 days and helicoptered out of New Orleans, right out of the Superdome. And I got back to dry land. I saw that shit and I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest moment of my life.
Well, certainly if you have that kind of context for it, then you have, you know, a way better and different perspective than we would.
But I just want to be fair. Jeremy is hitting the nail on the head by calling him an asshole. I don't disagree with that, but like I see it all as purely entertainment, and if he's going to make an ass out of himself on national TV, at least I get to laugh at the out of the world kind of unfolding in front of our eyes.
Well, and also it makes that South Park fish sticks episode way, way funnier too when you put it in that type of context, when it's just, you know, what Jeremy is saying about Kanye is extremely sent up in that episode.
I need to watch it again. I haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah. It's based on the episode is just about a silly joke that the kids tell, and Kanye doesn't get it. And he keeps trying to come up with intelligent explanations for why it's funny and, you know, and all that. And everybody's, you know, he takes the joke seriously. And people think that he's gay or whatever. He thinks that people think that he's gay or whatever because he likes fish sticks. and he tries to come up with all this explanation for it and everything. It's funny.
There are a couple of really good questions that will take a long time to answer. I'm going to put them in my pocket for next time. But ones that would be a little easier to answer quickly. One of them wants to know all of our thoughts on the latest Batman v Superman trailer.
Okay. Go ahead. I'd say go ahead, Jeremy, on that and answer, and then I'll put my thoughts in on it.
All right. Well, this is clearly the trailer they should have put out last time. And they're clearly responding to the backlash that they showed too much with the last major trailer, because this one doesn't show any of the – I forget this bad guy's name. I'm a terrible DC fan. The monster thingy breathing fire from the last trailer, Doomsday.
Oh, yeah. I have no idea. Oh, Doomsday?
Yeah. So now I want to break this trailer down. First of all, it's a great trailer, and I think if they had skipped the last major trailer and made this the one, they could have built buzz a lot better. I think it turned a lot of people around. But the first 30 seconds is the best Batman action ever put to film. I mean, I read Batman comics from the time I was a teenager, and he's never been represented fighting style wise on screen the way he has been on the page. And this is just brutal. Have you guys all seen it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so just for the Batman action alone, I'm sold again. I'm going to go check it out. I still believe they're going to make a standalone Batman film with Affleck. And this has me more geeked than ever for that, especially if he directs it. You know, I'm still not sold on this Lex Luthor. I'm sure what he's doing is part of his act within the film, but he annoys me so far.
I sort of have two different things about this trailer. First off, I don't think that this movie made itself more millions of dollars with this trailer. I think it was going to be a huge hit no matter what.
Sure.
It didn't matter that a bunch of people were down on it. It's that same thing that we always hear every year with something like this. Oh, it doesn't look good, and it makes $100 million on opening weekend. This movie will easily eclipse $100 million over its opening weekend and all that. So you know, whatever. I don't really care that they came out with a new trailer. You're right, they should have come out with this earlier, but it also reeks of desperation to me. I immediately get to a fishy mode when the trailers that you've showed us so far weren't good at all, and then suddenly you come out with one that's great. Does that mean you just showed us all the good stuff that's in this movie? That's what I worry about when I see a trailer like this, is that they were holding back, trying to get people excited about it, and then they saw that people were down on it, so they're, all right, we'll show you that you shouldn't be down on it by showing you the 5 minutes or the 2 minutes that are good.
Yeah.
And out of a two and a half hour movie.
Well, I will go on record readmitting, after the last trailer, I called this year's Terminator Genesis.
Yeah.
So it has had a long way to go to even get me back, you know, to even, and I'm probably almost there just for that Batman stuff.
Batman is a lot more compelling in this this trailer. And so is Alfred, actually. Like, yeah. It makes Jeremy Irons a very believable Alfred. And it looks like they interact quite a bit based on the trailer. I don't know if I agree with Bruce Wayne's math about, like, if there's a 1% chance he's going to kill all of humanity, we got to take him out.
Yeah.
It reminded me a lot, actually, of Tony Stark and Ultron and the whole put, you know, armor around the world.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an extreme thing.
Definitely corrective action, and I think they did the best one. So if we can just purge the last trailer from our memories, we should be okay.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm not going to be doing that anytime soon.
Jay, did you want to say anything?
I'm so sorry. I'm going to be the hater and naysayer on this one. I'm just so ready for, like, a good romantic comedy or like some like heavy documentary or something. Like, I'm so sick of any hero. I doesn't even have to be a superhero. I'm just done with heroes in general. Just like, I'm sorry. I know I'm the
person. No, I think that leads naturally into one of the other questions I was going to bring up, which is, what's your opinion on a large number of superhero movies, and are we going to burn people out? And I was saying this 2-3 years ago, so it sounds like you're saying it for sure.
Definitely. Yeah.
Chris?
No, we're already there. The problem is that once something becomes popular, there's a rush to come out with everything that you can possibly come out with while it's hot.
Yeah.
And I can't fault a studio for doing that, but what you get now is watered down product because they're aiming for a release date more than they are trying to get a good movie to come out.
Sure.
And that has been the problem with Marvel since they said we're going to come out with, you know, we're going to make the Avengers and all that, and then we're going to go to Phase 2 and so on and so forth, is that everything has been narrowed down to this. We need to come out with as many as possible in a short amount of time. And then now you have Warner Brothers saying, now we got to get a Justice League out. It won't be, I mean, it's already there, but we're going to get to a point where there might be a Marvel or Warner Brothers property that does seriously bad business.
Right.
And they've got 10 in the pipeline that are being made, and you know, it's kind of a precarious position, isn't it?
We're facing the same issue with Star Wars, because Disney's going to pump out some kind of Star Wars movie every year for predictably the next 5-10 years at a minimum. At some point, we're just going to have enough, right?
Yeah. I think they've forgotten what it means for a movie to have anticipation.
Yeah.
That 3-year wait. For a whole bunch of stuff. Now, you know, you got all these characters that can have their standalone movies, and none of them make sense because they were the Avengers. And, you know, it seems like every big problem that comes up should be an Avengers problem.
Right.
I mean, that's nothing new. Every year we're getting 3 of these comic book things. Now with Warner Brothers throwing in Justice League stuff, you're going to get even more. And that's my main concern with it, is that, yeah, you naturally are going to get tired of it. And they don't really plan these things out like they used to. They should have a 3-year gap between these movies, but their thoughts are that, oh, well, then we'll lose the momentum. But I think movies like Fast and the Furious have shown that you can have something going for years and years and years and not have to worry about it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Here's a fun one that I think we've all probably discussed at some point in our lives, just not together. Best trilogy of all time.
Best trilogy of all time. One of you guys want to start on that?
I'm going to go straight to 2 that I always end up arguing for in this conversation, and that's the Bourne movies and the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And you know, for me, both trilogies have 3 A to A plus films. There's no dip in quality, and in fact, it almost gets better as you go. And a lot of trilogies that people argue in this debate usually have like that one fatal flaw movie, that one that's just not as good as the rest, that keep them from contention for me.
Yeah, and you're talking about that. Like, there were two that instantly came to mind, and they both have fatal flaw movies. The Godfather and Back to the Future, which, you know, you have Back to the Future 2 is loved by many. There's a lot of people who have a really special place in their heart for that. I'm not one of them. I like Back to the Future 3 a lot. You know, it's obviously a return to form for them, but Back to the Future 2 is definitely like the valley in that trilogy. And then Godfather 3, oh my God, it's so not good. And it brings up an interesting thing. Like the Godfather, the first two came out in the 70s where movies were made a certain way. And then The Godfather 3 came out in 1990, where movies had changed quite a bit by that point, and it just sticks out like a sore thumb in that trilogy. You know, everything is all like, you know, the 80s had just passed, and movies were just done just a completely different way. And, you know, it suffers from it. And also just the fact that everybody did it to cash a paycheck, basically, was not good either. And somehow it got a Best Picture nomination out of all that. So there you go. There's some more Oscar controversy for you. But I would have to agree with you on that Bourne thing. The Bourne trilogy is definitely just A+. And it's, you know, everything's great about it. I remember the Bourne Identity came out and I was like, oh yeah, that was a pretty good movie. And then you watch it again and you're like, oh man, I really like this. Yeah. And, you know, Supremacy and Ultimatum are both great too. Although a lot of people don't like the Paul Greengrass shaky cam stuff in it.
I can look past it.
Yeah. I really like it in that, but, I'm going to piggyback on you with the Bourne there.
I love Bourne, but I'm going to actually go a different way. I'm going to say Toy Story.
Yeah, I was hoping somebody would bring that up.
John Lasseter, he's a hero of mine, and Ed Catmull, which, by the way, read Creativity, Inc. It's one of the great books of our time. It's so good. But just anything Pixar, I'll go and watch. But the Toy Story trilogy is so impressive and so consistent. And if you know what they went through to make this consistent and build story, it's so impressive. And it's also one of these films that adults and kids will like for years and years and years. So that's even more impressive in my mind.
Yeah, that's one of the ones that I don't usually pick for my side and to argue, but I always accept that argument. Toy Story is a fantastic trilogy. Barrett?
Yeah, I think I can make an argument to say that the first two Godfather films are good enough to actually overcome the craziness of the third one. If you put me on a desert island, that's probably what I would want to watch. For some reason, to me, the Bourne movies blend together. So I just can't. I like all of them, but if I put on an Ultimatum or a Supremacy, the Identity stands on its own. But you know, I really can't tell which one is which, but that's just me. So I would actually just go for the original Star Wars trilogy. I mean, it you could make an argument saying that the Return of the Jedi is the fatal flaw movie, and you can make a good argument for it. But
I wouldn't be on that. I think it's a good movie. I think it just got over the years the Ewoks got a bad rap, you know, the cuteness. And I think it was exacerbated by the fact that when Lucas did the special editions, he was exclusively putting all this cutesy shit and all these, you know, things. And then of course the prequels really threw that into overdrive. But Return of the Jedi used to be my favorite one, 'cause I was, you know, I was a kid. It was the first one I got to see in the theater.
Yeah, the totality of that trilogy is really entertaining, I would say. So that would be my pick.
Yeah, I also accept the Star Wars trilogy. I'm disappointed nobody brought up a terrible trilogy that I could beat down.
Well, you know, as soon as they come out with a Best Exotic Marigold Hotel 3, then we'll figure out whether that's the best one or not.
You could make an argument for the Fantastic Four, those first two, and then the one that came out last year. That's a fantastic trilogy.
Definitely.
Pun intended.
Definitely. Oh, it's fantastic. And then Then the X-Men trilogy, which turned into 9 movies.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Somebody's going to be commenting under this podcast, say, you can't call Bourne a trilogy now that they made another one.
Yeah, well, the Bourne Legacy was basically a prequel or a side movie to the original trilogy anyway.
So no, you can't really... it's a cheap imitation, but it got such a bad rap that when I finally watched it, I was like, this isn't that bad.
No, I actually like Bourne Legacy. It's just that, you know, I think people were saying, oh, it's not Matt Damon, it's not good. So, I mean, I actually kind of like Bourne Legacy. All right. Well, that appears to be our Sincast for this week. We do this every Monday. So we will see you next time. I'm Chris Atkinson with Jeremy Scott, Barrett Scherer, and Jay Lalonde. We'll see you soon.
Peace.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to check out CinemaSins on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr. And be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Ball kicking first.
Okay. And then right after that, go, hey, where's the Lord of the Rings walking tour?
Walking tour.
Can we rent some eagles?
Yeah. Can we rent some eagles? That'd be great. Can they take us halfway there and then just drop us off? Yeah. It'll be a good podcast for sure.
Yeah.
I can't wait till you start ripping into Adele for reasons we can't get into.
Actually, I don't begrudge Adele. She actually seems like a pretty cool chick, but like
I could see that going well. Jay, you hate Adele, yep. Why? I'm not supposed to talk about it.
I can't talk about how I hate Adele. Wow, that's some rumor starting shit right there.
2 seconds.
Fuck you, Barrett.
You fucked us on that one, Barrett. You
God damn it.
I hate Barrett so much.
Jesus Christ. Bootleg fireworks thing?
Oh, the Rikus, help me, Jesus.
The oh, Rikus. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, my God. That video is so hysterical. Every time I watch it, I end up crying.
Have I seen this video? I think I've seen this video.
Yeah, it's the guy sets off fireworks, but they go all over the street in the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
And the
guy is like giving his commentary and shit during it.
Yeah, he's like, Jesus, Jesus, oh, Jesus.
Yeah. Up and at them.
Up and at them. The goggles. They do nothing.
All right. Well, do we need to say anything else?
No, I was going to make a joke about turning you saying I liked the Bourne Legacy into a ringtone. And I never realized it was a bad idea.
King of Limbs?
No. The one that was considered the best of the last decade.
Of the last decade? Okay, Computer?
No. The last decade. Why can't we come up with this?
Hail to the Thief?
No. You guys are coming up with every album other than this.
In Rainbows.
Nope.